This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Max Schreck, who will be portraying our vampire, Count Orlok. As you no doubt have heard, Max's methods are somewhat unconventional, but I am sure you will come to respect his artistry in this matter.
That's John Malkovich in a scene from the new film Shadow of the Vampire. The movie imagines life on the set during the making of the classic silent film Nosferatu, the first and perhaps the greatest of all vampire movies. Malkovich plays the obsessed director F.W. Murnau. Willem Dafoe plays Max Schreck, the actor who starred as the vampire in Nosferatu. We'll hear from Dafoe a little later. Shadow of the Vampire opens nationally next week. It was produced by Nicolas Cage's company. Cage studied Nosferatu when he starred in the 1988 film Vampire's Kiss. I spoke with Cage in 1990.
Let's talk a little bit about Vampire's Kiss. This is a wonderful film. You play a character who is a very obnoxious literary agent, and he thinks he's turning into a vampire because he's gone to bed with someone who he believes bit him, you know, a vampire, a female vampire who he believes bit him. And he starts, you know, shrinking at the sign of the cross and asking people to put a stake through his heart to take him out of his misery. It's an incredibly original performance that you give. It just seemed to me like you must have watched all the new and old horror films to get the classic vampire gestures for the movie.
Well, you know, that's true, actually. I was exposed to the movie Nosferatu at a very early age because my father was teaching film, and the original Nosferatu, starring Max Schreck, the black and white silent vampire movie, gave me nightmares for years. And those images, especially his body language and his gestures and movements, stayed with me. And I always thought it'd be great to be able to incorporate that kind of silent film acting, where they were using their bodies more because they had to compensate for the lack of sound, and try to bring it into modern film. And with Vampire's Kiss, I saw an opportunity to do that, kind of explore that German expressionist style of acting that those guys were doing back then, like in Cabinet of Dr. Caligari and even Emil Jannings. And the only way I could pull it off, I figured, was if the character was insane, because you can't really act like that in modern film in a normal format, because people just wouldn't understand or get it or relate to it or want to relate to it. But if the character is insane, and especially if he thinks he's turning into a vampire, there's just a wonderful landscape of things you can do. And so I brought those old style gestures to the character because of his insanity, basically.
Well, one example of the kind of really large gesture that you're talking about is a widening of the eyes. I mean, your eyes get huge in one of the scenes. Did you know you had the capacity to do that with your face?
Well, I experimented in front of a mirror. You know, see, that was what Max Schreck was doing in Nosferatu. His eyes were really wide, and he was just spooky, and I figured it would be kind of cool in one scene to try to freak the secretary, Alva, played by Maria Conchita Alonso, freak her out instead of yelling at her, which was originally what the script called for, just totally yelling at her. There was so much yelling in the movie anyway that I thought it might be more intense to try to use my eyes to freak her out and intimidate her. And I just wanted the eyes to keep getting bigger. And Robert Bierman, the director, staged the camera angle so that the camera would move in slowly into my face as my eyes were getting slowly, progressively bigger and bigger and weirder and spookier. So it was, I was pretty happy with that. It was kind of a cool thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's get to the cockroach eating sequence.
There's
a scene where you're in your kitchen, and this is after you've decided you're turning into a vampire, and there's a cockroach crawling across the burner of the stove, and you scoop it up in your hand and eat it. Now, we don't see you swallow it in the movie, but we do see you chewing on it, and there's no edit, so it's definitely the real thing that's gone in your mouth,
yeah,
I think.
Definitely the real thing. originally they wanted me to eat raw eggs, and that didn't do anything for me.
Sylvester Stallone had already done that.
Yeah, exactly. And I wanted to tie in the Renfield thing, you know, Renfield from the Dracula novel where he was eating the bugs and stuff. And
Renfield's always the assistant who's in the insane asylum.
Right, he's the assistant to Dracula. It was a slow progression for Peter Lowe. I mean, first he's eating pistachios, then he's eating a cockroach, then he finally eats the dove and ultimately bites a girl's neck and kills her and he drinks her blood. So it was like this progressive building from pistachio to girl. And the cockroach was one of the steps in the disintegration of Peter Lowe. I said, you know, I want to try eating a cockroach. And everybody was like, you've got to be crazy. And I said, yeah, I know what you mean. I really don't like cockroaches myself. They wrangled up 3 New York cockroaches out of somebody's basement. And the day arrived where I had to do it, and I saw the bug when I walked on the set, and the legs were kicking and the antennas were going, and it looked huge. And I almost said, guys, I can't do it. I figured that would be a cop-out because, you know, I'd set it up and made them wrangle for cockroaches for weeks. I put the cockroach close to me, and every muscle in my body was just saying, don't do it. And the wings were going, and then I did it, and I couldn't sleep for about 3 days, and I couldn't eat, but, well, I did it, and there it is. You know what I mean?
Did you call a doctor first and ask if chewing a cockroach could kill you?
No, yeah, they said it would be okay. What I did was I rinsed my mouth out with 100-proof vodka and sterilized my mouth before I did it. And then when I spat the cockroach out, I sterilized it again.
What did it taste like?
Oh, you know, I couldn't remember. All I know is it was soft. It was not crunchy. It was soft, and it was just a nightmare.
Does it ever come back and haunt you?
Well, when I talk about it like this and I start thinking about it, I get goosebumps and I'm starting to get the willies again.
Huh. Nicolas Cage is my guest. Is it a true story that when you were doing the film Birdie, and this was in the early part of the 1980s, that you pulled 2 teeth as part of your getting into the role?
Well, actually what happened was I had baby teeth up until I was 22.
Oh.
And they wouldn't come out. So by coincidence, simultaneously, I had to pull the teeth out while I was making Birdie so that the other teeth would come in because they were getting impacted. I guess people just thought it was some example of wacko method, you know, masochism, which it really wasn't.
Nevertheless, did it help you in the role to experience so much pain? Because
well,
I think
yeah,
that's what
actually,
people assumed
I figured,
yeah.
I figured as long as it's here, might as well use it, you know.
So how did you use it? What does that mean?
Well, if you're experiencing dental pain while you're doing a scene where your face has been blown off, just basically you don't have to act. Just use the dental pain.
Can you tell when you watch the movie back that you were experiencing real pain?
Yeah. Yeah, I can. I don't actually like to watch that movie, to tell you the truth.
Because you don't like the movie?
No, I like the movie. It's just that it was like, it was a little private, you know. I let so much stuff come out, and I get a little embarrassed when I see it just because it's just so bare.
Have you ever gone to real extremes, the equivalent of pulling teeth, to get into a role?
Yeah, I mean, I had to learn while I was working and learn publicly through trial and error, and sometimes I fell on my face and sometimes it worked, but I started at a pretty early age. I started when I was 17, and I really didn't have that much training. So I basically just did all the things that I'd heard the other great actors had done, like staying up all night to do a scene the next day to look tired, or really doing the method thing. And on Cotton Club, I was playing a pretty crazy gangster who was very feared in Harlem. And I would walk down the street in New York and, you know, smash people's remote control cars and have everything scatter and, you know, really believe I was this psychotic killer. And by the time I was, I, uh, was about to do the scene the next day, I brought all that stuff to the scene, and it worked, but, you know, needless to say, I wasn't liked very much, and I mean, I do have a life, and I don't really want to live the part anymore, so I stopped doing that, and I realized I could get there without all that intense living the role kind of thing.
So what did you do? You smashed remote control cars?
Well, I went down Christopher Street, and there was a guy selling remote control cars for $50, and I said, let me see that, and I put it in the middle of the street, and I jumped on and smashed it, and all the pieces were flying around, all the people just scattered and saying, oh, you're crazy, and all this, and I did give the guy $50 for it, but it just sort of helped me believe that I could create fear in people, which is what that character did in the movie.
You had no confidence that you were really capable of generating fear in somebody before that?
Well, it felt like I was able to, you know. I'm really not a violent guy. I'm not a fighter. I'm not into that. But when I was playing that role, at least at that point, I was young and I was just experimenting with trying to evoke that.
Have you ever tried something pretty outrageous in a role and had a director object to it and say that's too far out?
Yeah. I was doing Racing with the Moon, and I've always had this idea of breaking the fourth wall, which is like taking it into hyperrealism, which is what I did in Vampire's Kiss, actually, when I ate the cockroach. I wanted people to know that it was really happening and to get into that and create that sort of visceral aura. And, Racing with the Moon, I took a pocket knife out, and I basically cut my arm open and wanted the blood to go and flow on film and have people know it was a very realistic moment. And Richard Benjamin basically said, wrong movie, Nick. Let's cool out a little.
So did he want you to use fake blood, or did he not like that whole idea of self-mutilation anyways?
He just didn't like the idea at all. It wasn't even in the script.
I just wanted to do this one thing,
you know, and try to do something hyper-real. I was experimenting with a lot of different things back then, and I'm glad I did it and went through it, but I do feel like now it's a little bit easier for me to arrive at what is needed in the scene emotionally or in terms of character without doing that intense self-destructive kind of acting.
Several of your early films were directed by Francis Ford Coppola, who's actually your uncle. Rumblefish, Peggy Sue Got Married, and Cotton Club. You're a Coppola, but you changed your name to Cage. When did you change it, and why did you do it?
Well, when I first started working, I made a couple of TV shows, and I went in to read the other actors for Rumblefish. And by my surprise, they said, well, we'd like you to be in the movie. And you know, then I was still Nicholas Coppola, and I felt a lot of pressure from the other actors, you know, Mickey and Matt, and basically them thinking I didn't have the goods because I was just a case of nepotism. And it kind of made me a little stiff, you know. I felt a lot of that pressure. So when I changed my name, I felt like I was brand new. I went in to read for a movie called Valley Girl, and it was the first time that I'd auditioned for a movie where the casting lady wasn't talking for a half an hour about the movies that my uncle had made and totally taking my mind off the scene that I had prepared for 2 days, you know? So it really helped me out to change the name, and it took the pressure off of me, and I felt a lot freer.
Why did you choose Cage as your last name?
Well, there's a long time ago, I used to read a lot of comic books, and there was a superhero, and his name was Luke Cage, Power Man. And I just thought it was a cool-sounding name, and then I was listening to John Cage's music, which I found very stimulating, and I just decided to use it. There were a couple other names that I was going to go for, but it just sounded right to me. It was just sort of simple and to the point.
Would you ever change your name back again to Coppola?
You know, I've actually thought about that, but I don't think so. I'm feeling like Nicholas Coppola is a thing of the past, and I'm really comfortable with Cage. So, and that's the way it's going to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank you so much for talking with us. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
Nicolas Cage recorded in 1990. His company produced the new movie Shadow of the Vampire. We'll hear from the film's star, Willem Dafoe, after a break. This is Fresh Air. The new film Shadow of the Vampire imagines life on the set during the making of the 1922 silent film classic Nosferatu, the first and perhaps the greatest of all vampire movies. The star of Nosferatu, Max Schreck, is portrayed as the ultimate character actor. He starts behaving like a vampire on the set. He even bites the cameraman on the neck and sucks his blood. In this scene, Nosferatu's director, F.W. Murnau, played by John Malkovich, pleads with actor Max Schreck to behave. Schreck is played by Willem Dafoe.
How dare you! How dare you destroy my photographer! You idiot!
Did I kill some of your people, Murnau? I can't remember.
We have an arrangement.
Don't pretend you mourn, Herr Doctor. I know you.
Why him, you monster? Why not the script girl?
The script girl. I'll eat her later.
No, you will not. Our bargain. You agreed not to hurt my people. Listen to me. Do you understand? This requires that I go back to Berlin to find another photographer and then to fly him back here. And you... you will control yourself while I am away.
I don't think we need the writer any longer.
I don't expect you to understand this, and I am loath to admit it myself. But the writer is necessary. All my crew is necessary. Do you understand?
Shadow of the Vampire opens nationally next week. It was shown last spring at the Cannes Film Festival. The festival's American Pavilion staged an interview between the film's star, Willem Dafoe, and Roger Ebert, film critic for the Chicago Sun-Times and host of Ebert and Roper at the Movies. Here's an excerpt of their conversation.
Everybody at this festival is talking about your work as Max Schreck, the Nosferatu, and it's just an amazing performance, and it's certainly on my list of the top two or three performances. I want to start maybe with the exterior and then kind of work into the interior. You disappear. You're not there on the screen. It's not makeup either. I'm not aware of makeup. I'm not aware of whatever you're doing, which is good because I don't want to be. I'm very familiar with the Murnau film, and I simply see someone who could have been in the Murnau film without a single atom being different. Can you talk a little bit about your technical or physical preparation?
Well, it's such a literal mask. It's such a strong mask. Even in the conventional movies, sometimes I seek out a mask because it frees me up. Mm-hmm. It lets go of my ego agenda. It makes me feel like someone else. It invites different impulses than I have normally and kind of puts you in a place where you can pretend better. This was so extreme, and I had such a great model with the Max Schreck role. It started with mimicry, really. And I couldn't really do any work until I couldn't begin my work except for maybe some superficial reading on Murnau and the period, and of course seeing Murnau's films. The work really started once I got in the makeup, in the costume, because it was so restricting. As you say, I looked in the mirror and I wasn't there anymore. So who was? Max Schreck. It's like a fast track to pretending. I didn't feel myself so much anymore. It's a wonderful help. It's a good setup.
And who was Max Schreck, in your opinion? Because he will be forever known, despite the fact that he led a full life, as the Nosferatu. Image will always be remembered exactly as it was in that film.
A perfect case of his success really destroying him, because apparently he didn't work much after that because he couldn't be disassociated from that role. I didn't feel the need so much to know who Max Schreck was. I was more concerned with using that his performance in the Nosferatu as a model. And then the other parts of our film that are invention just really came out of, you know, the situation and trying to inhabit that mask.
It's funny. I mean, I saw the film last night with an audience, and I had seen it once before. And when I watched, I was asking myself some of these questions, and I can't remember, quite frankly. It's a very strong script, and you play the scenes just like you'd play any of those scenes. I don't remember. I see all this eye rolling and all this kind of extreme gestural language. I honestly can't say I analyzed that or intended that. It was just a natural kind of a natural outgrowth of playing the scenes, as you would almost conventionally. But you've got this wonderful filter that you're playing it through, and that allows you, you're forced into a different language, to find in a different language, and part of that language is eye rolling and clicking your fingernails. Those aren't ideas, they come out of necessity. The first time you're at lunch and you reach for the salt and your nails go like that, then you go like this, you hear the click, and then you simply find it useful in a scene to express yourself.
Willem Dafoe speaking with film critic Roger Ebert last spring at the Cannes Film Festival as part of the American Pavilion series Industry in Focus. We'll hear more from Dafoe in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.